Merci, Madame la Présidente.
I would appreciate the reference a few minutes ago to my father, and I thought I would begin by establishing a line of descent in the form of a letter that only came into my possession yesterday evening, the copy of it, dated November 8th, 1956. It's addressed to Professor Thomas Balog of Balliol College, Oxford University. Dear Thomas, many thanks for the review. I am afraid you are too flattering about the Marshall Plan. However, oddly enough, I was one of the first to suggest large-scale organized aid to Western Europe. It was in a National Planning Association pamphlet, which I published in 1946, and the letter is signed by J. K. Galbraith, my father. The Marshall Plan was heroic enough, but the challenge we face now is larger. It is by far the largest in terms of the planning, regulation, investment, and social reconstruction required, the largest ever faced, I would judge, by human society at the planetary scale. The Green New Deal is rapidly developing into a constellation of programs to meet that challenge. It has manifestations both in America and in Europe. In the United States, a program for $16 trillion of public investments in energy conversion has been proposed by Senator Sanders. This is, if you spread it out over a number of years, roughly the scale of the information technology boom in the 1990s, large but perfectly feasible in economic terms, dramatic in terms of what it would achieve in changing the relationship of the American economy to its energy supplies and usage. And in Europe, we have a number of programs, including notably the European New Deal of DiEM25, which I've had a privilege of making some contributions to. All share precedence in the New Deal of Franklin Roosevelt, and in the goal of meeting that challenge in free and democratic societies. So let me say a word about the actual New Deal, the one that began in 1933. It was not inspired by Hayek nor by Keynes. It was not about restoring a free market economy, which had never existed anyway in the United States, nor was it about pump priming or stimulus, as we commonly talk, the language that we commonly use today. It was rather created by circumstance and necessity in the face of a comprehensive failure of the previously existing system. It began with emergency reform of finance, of banking, with a major program to address the devastation, the exhaustion of American agriculture and the decline in the environment in the form of the Dust Bowl, among other things, with soil conservation, reforestation, went on to industrial rationalization, and then extended to a vast program of roads, schools, airfields, courthouses, museums, parks, electrification, jobs programs, art and culture, including supporting the work of Jackson Pollock and William de Kooning, social insurance programs, the creation of Social Security, minimum wage, and fair labor standards. In short, by force of necessity, what the New Deal did was to create the modern continental economic and social system that came to characterize the United States in the 20th century. A model that was eventually extended to Europe and blended with the socialist and social democratic traditions already present on this continent, having defeated fascism. It was broadly successful and managed also to outlast the communist systems of Eastern Europe. But having made that great transformation, we now found ourselves needing another for reasons that we all know, the success of the previous system has created new problems, which will play out over a time scale of decades and centuries with catastrophic effects if we do not begin to address them now in a serious way. So the first, there are basically three steps that are required. The first, critical one, is to set out concrete goals and timetables to meet the environmental obligations, and these are given to us largely by the scientific community, which tells us that the reductions required are now both drastic and urgent. So we know that we have to do things, and we have to do them quickly, and we have to do them on a large scale. The second step is to plan out the transformation of energy sources, of carbon sinks, of mitigation strategies, and the corresponding changes in social arrangements to ensure that these become politically feasible and palatable to the broad population, consistent with continuing democratic conditions. We need clean power, we need clean transportation, we need clean construction, and the retrofitting of existing habitations, and many other things in order to make this possible. On the social front, we're going to need to use all available resources, including human resources, which is why the European New Deal program includes a job guarantee at the national level, that at the national wage scales, to ensure that the scourge of unemployment does not come to derail the entire project. It is obvious that there are burdens involved, but these burdens must be shared in a way that is not only fair, but broadly seen to be fair, and that actually improves and shows the way toward an improvement in the quality of life for people, particularly who are not already the most advantaged in our societies. And the third step is to work out how, in financial terms, to mobilize the resources that are required. And you've already spoken to this to some degree. This is a project which is requires the use of both national and international authorities. In Europe, one has the European Investment Bank as an available mechanism, but it's not the only one that can be used to achieve this goal. Finance is, however, a tool. It is a means, not an end. Obstacles and constraints exist for ideological and political purposes. These are artificial in character, and they must be either changed, broken, or evaded, according to whatever is the most expedient way of getting the actual jobs done. The financial means should be those that achieve the goals at the lowest cost and in the most convenient way. I know my friend Yanis Varoufakis yesterday proposed conversion bonds, which would allow the Maastricht compliant proportions of European national government debt to be taken by the ECB and reissued as they mature at the interest rates that the very low interest rates that the ECB that are available to the ECB, and this would be a way of creating fiscal space to address the larger issues. But broadly speaking, there are many different ways. In the United States in World War II, as the New Deal culminated in the military mobilization required to confront fascism, the Federal Reserve, our central bank, was simply drafting. It was instructed to set a specific rate for U.S. government treasury bonds at 2%, and it could be, in our context, as you pointed out, even lower, in order to finance the war effort, which was roughly 25% of GDP every year, until the GDP itself was double what it had been in 5 years previously. And this was done. So central banks are not the key players. They are an enabling factor if they are used properly, but that requires understanding that the rules cannot be given to us by lawyers or bankers or economists. And I have to say, if the economics profession had existed in 1933, the New Deal would never have been created, and we would not be living in roughly functional democratic and free societies now. So I have my profession has something to answer for. Don't let us or my colleagues tell you what you can and cannot do. Set out the task that needs to be done, figure out how to do it, and let the financing follow, as I say, in the lowest cost and most convenient way. Thank you very much.
Merci.